led by the Reverend Dr. Kirsty Thorpe. And now on FM, we continue our new Book of the Week. Rebecca Front continues reading from Curious, her recollections that explore the awkwardness of human interaction and the randomness of memory. In today's episode, she revisits the event which triggered a fear of going back to school.
At the age of 11, I decided I had to leave school. This was easier said than done, of course. There were several factors standing in my way. The law, for instance, and the borough council, my parents and teachers. My friends weren't too supportive either, perhaps because they didn't see why I should escape 7 years of educational servitude if they couldn't. But it wasn't education that I wanted to escape. It was something much more threatening. I had to leave school, or my mother would suffer a hideous fate. I'd always been a swotty kind of a kid. School was all the things I liked under one roof, friends and books and learning new things. The primary years were peaceful and happy. I passed the 11 plus exam and got into the local grammar school. Mum and Dad were delighted. 2 weeks before I was due to start there, with the blazer bought and the pencils sharpened, we went away on holiday. On a picnic by a river, my dad almost drowned. He couldn't swim, so he'd been doing nothing more dangerous than paddling waist-deep close to the bank. But he'd got his foot caught in the roots of a tree, lost his balance, and been sucked under by a powerful current. He was almost unconscious when three young blokes tore off their shirts, waded in, and hauled him out. He didn't die, but it was a damn close-run thing. Grandpa, however, wasn't so lucky. He'd been in hospital recovering from a heart attack when we'd left. Mum rang him every day to make sure he was okay, and each time he sounded stronger. Then 2 days after Dad's near miss, Grandpa abruptly died. It seemed to me that a pattern was emerging. Death had it in for my family. He'd tried to take Dad, but Dad had got away. He'd taken Grandpa out of revenge, and now, with the score at 1-1, Death was out to win. He was obviously coming after Mum. I can't state too strongly how clear this was to me. I knew, just knew, that Mum was in danger, but nobody else seemed to be aware of it. As a result, Mum was wantonly engaging in all kinds of reckless activities, going in cars, crossing roads, climbing stairs, eating pieces of fruit small enough to choke her, as if no harm could come from them. She couldn't be trusted to look after herself, and Dad, a man who'd almost perished in a paddling accident for God's sake, clearly couldn't be trusted to look after her either. Teenage brothers are teenage brothers. There was no point trying to get him on my side. So it had to be me. I had to protect her myself. I didn't know how I was going to do that, but I did know one thing. I couldn't do it if I was at school. At first, there was no consistent pattern. I'd wake up feeling fine, go to school on the bus with my friend, and then suddenly, for some reason, become aware that Mum was out somewhere doing who knew what, and that something terrible might happen to her. I'd feel sick, my stomach would hurt, and I'd need to go to the medical room. On a different day, the symptoms would start when I woke up. There'd be an hour or so of crying, wailing, retching and writhing before Dad would bundle me in the car and drop me at school. By then, there was no point in fighting it anymore, and I'd go on to have a perfectly nice day. Parents and teachers alike were bewildered. I knew that if I said what was worrying me, they'd just try to reassure me. I genuinely believed Mum was in danger and that only I could save her. I didn't want to be reassured. This was a matter of life or death, and if they made me go into school, I didn't want to think what might happen. Throughout the first term, things got steadily worse. Most days I went in, but would end up in the sick room. Some days I didn't go in at all. Every morning I would wake the household with my whimpers, like some morose cockerel. After a while, I took to hurling my school shoes out of my bedroom window, reasoning that no one would send me out of the house barefoot. Hoping a complete change might be the solution, Mum and Dad asked if I might be transferred to a school closer to home. Before a transfer could be agreed, though, I had to be assessed by an educational psychologist. In the first session, I was given a kind of exam. Part of it consisted of straightforward verbal reasoning, not unlike the questions in the 11 plus. I actually rather enjoyed them. There were also common sense type questions that were, I suppose, designed to see how I coped with the world around me. In the next assessment, I was asked about my life. Particularly close interest was shown to the fact that I sucked my thumb and still slept with a doll. But lots of the 11-year-old girls I knew sucked their thumbs, and all of them slept with dolls, so I felt rather aggrieved that I was the only one being judged on it. And besides, if you wanted evidence that I wasn't like other children, the fact that I'd taken to throwing my shoes out of the window seemed like a pretty good starting point. In the final session, I was seen with Mum and Dad. After a lot of questions and nervous answers and uncomfortable pauses while the psychologist made notes and we all tried to read her writing upside down, we were told that there didn't seem to be anything wrong with me. Educationally and emotionally, I was, it appeared, tickety-boo, A1, a perfectly normal child from a perfectly normal family. Mum and Dad were clearly relieved. After all, only months before, we'd been the kind of family you saw on the cover of Ladybird books, smiling cheerily as we clambered over a stile on some idyllic outing. I think I was probably the first to realise that this clean bill of health wasn't entirely helpful. With none of us any the wiser, the psychologist asked if we had any questions. Mum and Dad shook their heads and said they didn't think so, but they'd been sitting in the waiting room for most of the time, so they didn't know what had been discussed. It seemed to me that maybe there was something she should have asked me. With all the written tests and questions about cuddly toys and why it wasn't a good idea to put your hand into a fire, she hadn't actually got around to asking me what had started all this. I half thought maybe that was how this process worked, but on the off chance that it wasn't, I mentioned it. She flicked back through her notes, as if she was sure we must have covered this already. But not finding anything, she looked a little flustered and asked me what I wanted to say. I told her how Dad had nearly drowned right there in front of us, how Grandpa had had a heart attack and died, and how I'd had to start big school days after the funeral. I told her about death stalking the family, that if I turned my back on Mum, he would get her too. And I told her that I kind of knew this wasn't true anymore because Mum and Dad had explained it to me, but that didn't stop me being frightened and imagining horrible things. I don't remember being offered any counselling. I don't remember anyone giving my parents any advice on how to deal with me. We went back home, and it was reluctantly agreed that I may as well stay there until a place became available at the new school. As Mum was a teacher herself, the only thing to be done was for her to try to keep my education going as best she could. I had, to all intents and purposes, got what I wanted. I was at home all day and every day with my mum. I should have been happy, or at least relieved. But my God, being homeschooled was dull. Everyone was miserable. Mum was under threat of losing her job, which we really couldn't afford. Dad was permanently grumpy. He's never really got to grips with mental health problems. Even now, when we're out somewhere, he frequently steers me towards lifts, and when I remind him that I've been claustrophobic most of my life, he'll say, "But it's a big lift." And my brother was cross with me too, largely because he'd been moaning for years about school, and nobody was offering to let him stay home. By the time the new school came up with a place for me, I was desperate to get back into mainstream education. In an unguarded moment, my mum had let slip that this transfer was a last chance. If I couldn't settle this time, the local authority would put me in a special unit for school refusers. I didn't know what a special unit was. I don't think she did either. But I knew from the way she said it that it wasn't special in a good way. On the first day of the new term, the head welcomed me and my mother, gave us tea and biscuits, then handed us over to her lieutenant, the deputy head, Miss Dyson, to introduce me to my new class. But as we left the head's office, it became clear to me that I was now expected to say goodbye to Mum. I couldn't do it. All the terror came back to me. I knew with absolute certainty that if I waved her off now, I would never see her again. I started to cry, then shout, then fight. Mum was beside herself and too exhausted to take any kind of control. She used up all her resources. She had nothing else to offer. Miss Dyson, however, had other ideas. She was around 50 years old, tall and slim, a firm face and a no-nonsense air, but quietly sympathetic, even when the tussle to get me away from Mum became physical. Eventually, noticing a huddle of girls gathering to watch this hysterical small creature attacking their deputy head, she took us both into her office. And this is where my life turned around. Miss Dyson listened carefully as Mum and I explained all the old stuff yet again. The nasty experiences, the fear, the habitual behaviour. She asked questions about us and me, and what I liked doing and what jobs my parents did, and what our lives had been like before all this nonsense had taken hold. She then quietly came up with a radical plan. Having discovered that Mum wrote children's stories, she offered her the chance to work on one right there in the school library. This way, Mum could be on the premises doing something rather glamorous, and I'd get to have her in school with me without any loss of face. It was simple, brilliant, and most importantly, it worked. I was taken to meet my new classmates, and Miss Dyson put the word out that my mum was a famous author who was writing a book in the school library. Nobody seemed to question it. Certainly nobody teased me about it. If anything, they seemed to think it was pretty cool. And there was another somewhat unexpected result of all this. The girls who'd witnessed my meltdown in the school corridor spread the rumour that I'd kicked Miss Dyson. Far from being cast as a vulnerable little victim, my panicky tussle had been misinterpreted as proof that I was hard. I had accidentally become notorious. I was the girl you didn't want to mess with. It took less than a week for me to settle at the school. I told Mum that I didn't need her with me anymore. I knew I was going to be fine. After all, if I did have any problems, Miss Dyson would be there to help. It was over. Mum went back to work, the family returned to its happy normality, and I started loving school more than ever before. Miss Dyson used to invite me to her study every so often for a glass of orange squash and a chat, and to check that everything was okay. At the end of my first term, she gave me a tiny silver teaspoon because it had on the end of the handle a little lion hallmark. "I've seen you change from a frightened mouse into a fierce lion," she explained, "and that's how I hope you'll stay." I made her a promise that now that I'd cracked this school business, I intended to make a success of it. I told her I was aiming to be head girl and I wanted to go to Oxford. I did both. It was my way of saying thank you to her.
Rebecca Front was reading from her book Curious, True Stories and Loose Connections. The book was abridged by Sarah Davis and produced by Gemma Jenkins. In a couple of minutes in Woman's Hour, we'll meet the Bedouin Lady Gaga and Annabelle Croft will talk tennis. Later, in Call You and Yours at midday, Winifred Robinson would like to hear your thoughts on school inspections. The Prime Minister has said from now on, Ofsted will make snap unannounced inspections. They'll also be checking whether schools are teaching British values in lessons. On Call You and Yours, we'll be asking whether you should choose a school because of its Ofsted report. Perhaps you picked your child's school because of a glowing recommendation, or maybe you're a teacher who dreads the inspections. Whether you're a governor, parent or teacher, we'd love love to hear your experiences of school inspections. Tell us your stories at youandyours@bbc.co.uk or call 03700 100 444. The lines are open now, and Call You and Yours takes to the air at 4 minutes past 12.